Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichton. With me tonight, as always, is Leo Sun, and with us is our special guest, Jim Peterson. Jim Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. I am so excited to be here with you. You know, we got a chance to chat at the airport on our way to Vegas, and so it was great to see you. And then Leo, I've known for so long, our time together in Sacramento and Los Angeles as well. I saw Leo this year. And Leo and I this year, Ryan, actually had the chance to make where was he from, Leo? Where was the guy that we saw at crypto.com before
he's
the Lakers
from the
game?
Philippines, I think.
He was from the Philippines. Yeah. And Leo and I are sitting there chatting, and he came up to us and started chatting, and we brought him onto the court at Staples Centers, Ryan, crypto.com. And we made that guy's day, man. We got pictures of him on the court with the Wolves on the floor and the Lakers. And then we got a picture with me and Leo with him too. So we've had big fun over the years, Leo.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a full circle moment kind of, cause I remember when I was in his shoes, you know, like, it was over 10 years ago. So 2013, I think, was the first time that, I got to really, stand and chat with you there and bringing me courtside on, back then it was Sleep Train or Arco, and then it was Sleep Train or Power Balance. Sacramento went through a lot of name changes back then, but yeah, so being able to go down, see him, and again, just to see that guy's face kind of light up again, like, that's why I'm so happy we have Jim on here today, because again, not only is he just awesome, you know, as a broadcaster in his playing days, but also just as a human, like, he's made so many fans feel special and feel like a part of the team. And again, I'm just happy to have you on and talk a little bit more about, you know, your days coming up into the NBA and, you know, with the Lynx, and then also broadcasting, and of course we're gonna talk a little Candace Hoopis as well too.
Was this the story you just told? Was this during the playoffs after game one, or was this during the regular season?
Yeah, it was game one, I believe.
Yeah.
And that was a fun one, too.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah.
We were having a good time in L.A. back then. And, you know, and so – but so the thing about Leo, people don't really realize this, but Leo – you know, I met him in Sacramento, but Leo's been living in L.A. So he made the commitment to come down to Sacramento, and everybody knows Boss – you know, Boss 10, who is a big Candace Hoopis guy as well, and a big Timberwolves fan in Sacramento. And between Boss and Leo, how many times have you guys made a Timberwolves broadcast, by the way, Leo, too? Because you guys have been on TV a lot over the years.
Yeah, we got a little compilation going. I want to say at least – we're looking at least like 7-8 times probably at this point. You know, at this point, we want to share the spotlight, Jim. You know, we're kind of stepping out of that. No, but yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we used to meet up in Sacramento, and, you know, it's funny because Ryan always – anytime we talk about the Kings or they come up, he says, oh, Leo, and you're Sacramento Kings. I was like, whoa. I'm from there. It's not my Kings. Exactly.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to have you on, and we're another good smooth transition here. Lynx won game one. Very fun game. Courtney Williams went sensational. Leo, I'll hand it off to you to talk to Jim about his time with the Lynx and also this year's team.
Yeah, well, first off, Jim, I mean, I'm sure you were able to at least catch part of, if not all of, that game against the Mercury, or, you know, even leading into the playoffs. Like, what are your thoughts on this year's team so far? It's been a crazy season. The Lynx have been doing so great. And again, just your general thoughts on the 2025 Minnesota Lynx.
I'm just a big Nafisa Collier fan. I've been a big Nafisa Collier fan for a long time, but really, I'm just a big Cheryl Reeve fan. I've been texting with Cheryl through this playoff run and towards the end of the season. And really, I'm always kind of texting her congratulations because I know what a great coach she is. And I learned so much basketball from her, you guys. You know, obviously I learned a lot playing in the NBA and I learned a lot broadcasting in the NBA, but it wasn't until I started coaching and having to game plan and having to watch video every day and having to grind that I really learned the game. Because it's one thing to play it. It's another thing to watch it. It's another thing to teach it. Yeah. And so having coached just made me a way better analyst. And so I would sit there during the NBA season and I would look at play sets and look at offense and defensive schemes. And I would bring them back to the links and integrate them with Cheryl. And then we would fine tune it and see what worked and what didn't work. But I just spent a lot of time going back and forth between NBA mindset, analyst role, coaching role. And when I see Cheryl Reeve take Lana Smith and she's defensive player of the year. And so last year, the Fisa Collier wins defensive player of the year. I texted right. Cheryl when Lon won. I texted her. I said, Cheryl, when you get back-to-back defensive player of the year awards from your players, that's a lot of coaching. That's scheme. That's putting right. your players in a successful position. And so I just was so proud of her. And I said, you know, I'm so grateful to have had that time with you to be able to understand like what you do and why you win isn't by accident. It's because your attention to detail and her willingness to sit there and hammer it out in a coaching office, in a coaching room, we would battle, you know what I mean? And she wants you to like battle her intellectually and coaching wise. And so, you know, I just am so proud of her and her coaching staff, Rebecca Brunson, Lindsey Whalen on the bench. You know, Eric Thibault has been added to the yep. staff this year. He's a big part of what they do. And so they just have a really great program there. And Cheryl's locked in. And I just am so proud of this Minnesota Lynx team.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing about that. I mean, so you spent about 7 years-ish, you know, as assistant coach, and then
eight years,
and then you got promoted yeah. to associate head coach, right, for a year. And so, I mean, you've obviously done a great job over there. You know, we see how much, you know, Cheryl, you know, how competitive she is and how intense she can get about that. But, you know, I would love to hear from you. I mean, obviously you still have a close relationship with her, but what type of person is Cheryl off the court, you know, that you've gotten to know her throughout the years? I mean, is she also just as, you know, fiery, competitive, you know, as she is when she's, you know, doing her job, or, you know, how is that?
Oh yeah, man. She wants to win everything. She wants to win. Like, you know, if you're playing a board game at home, she wants to win. We would play this game called Spoons. She okay. would have us come over and like, I don't know, have you ever played Spoons?
Yeah.
Oh my God. She is like getting physical when she's playing Spoons, man. She ain't a joke. No, she's super fiery. But you know, the thing about it, that Cheryl is so funny. She's a funny person. Like, she's great. And I got to tell you, and I tell Lindsey Whalen this, and Rebecca and I talk about this all the time. Rebecca's like my daughter. We've been, we were super close ever since she came to the Wolves and I started coaching her, and we just got really close. And you know, one of the things that was a touchstone for me was when we would circle up before every practice. We circle up, and at training camp, the first practice of training camp, we would circle up, and wherever you were standing in the circle, and I'm talking about like the center court jump circle, right? Okay. We're standing there. And wherever you're standing that first day is where you stand the rest of the season. Okay. So you don't deviate from that. Wherever you are in the circle, you have to go back to that spot every single day. And so there was a real genius behind that. You know, if I were running my own program, I would definitely do that because there are days that, you know, it's such a long season. You're looking for things to get you motivated to do it. And so like, sometimes you don't want to be there. You know what I mean? Like, you're tired. It's been a long season. But somehow when you come into the circle and you start looking at each other in the circle, you get energy from each other, you know? And sure. so, And Cheryl was so great at standing in the circle, and she would call on players to be able to speak. And she would call on, like, Lindsay Whalen didn't want to really talk. And for sure, Simone Augustus didn't want to talk. Hmm. And Rebecca Brunson didn't ever say anything. But when Rebecca talked, like, people listened to her. And she made those players become leaders. And so by doing that, by creating this dynamic in the circle and calling on players to ask them, like, hey, what do you got? Like, what do we need to hear from you today? What does the team need? Because the coaches can't always talk. And the best teams are the ones that police themselves. And so when Cheryl would call on Lindsay, call on Maya, call on Simone, call on Rebecca. And then also as a coach, you know, she was so good at taking and meeting with subsets of players. Like, she would meet with just the starters. She would meet with just the bench players. She would just meet with just the guards. She would meet with just the post players. And so there was never any confusion on what your role is, what the marching orders are, what you need to be doing on a nightly basis. So there's a reason why she's had so much success, you guys. And, you know, I can draw a lot of parallels with Chris Finch as well on the Wolves side, because Finchy is a lot the same, a big time communicator, does not suffer fools. If you're messing up on the court, he's going to let you know about it, just like Cheryl will. And that's what I love about coach. What I know about coaching, like, accountability is so important. And so for coaches that are willing to hold players accountable, it is such an important thing. And that this is why I love being in this organization, is because I'm surrounded by people that are professionals and that know how to do their job.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think so much of it, I mean, as you were saying that, it just sounds like she's not only, you know, great with X's and O's, but about a manager of personalities, right? You know, I feel like we heard that with the Timberwolves, like, you know, Finch is a great manager of personalities. I think that's something that's, you know, I think understated. Oftentimes things like, oh, you need to have, as a coach, I know for me, I'm just a fan. I'm just a random guy. I've never played, you know, high level basketball. So I assume that the best coaches are the ones that have the best strategies and the best game plans, where it's like, sometimes, you know, it's more than that, is what it sounds like.
Well, you know, the thing about it, though, it's like a doctor, you know, it's like some doctors are great at surgery, but they don't have great bedside manner, you know, or some doctors are great at research and they're able to, you know, sort through all the information and able to synthesize it down to be able to speak about it intelligently and be able to come with a great game plan. You know, but so very few doctors are great at surgery, great at bedside, great at research, great at the whole thing. And so I think sometimes they think the same thing is true with coaching, that some coaches are great at, you know, developing a game plan. But when you get into the game, they're not great at adjustments. Like, mm-hmm. like, because so much of coaching is, yeah, you have a game plan coming into the game. Like, you might have researched and watched the video and you've, like, seen the strengths and weaknesses of an opponent. But then when you get into the game, like, it doesn't always happen the way you think it's going to. So now what are you going to do? Are you going to adjust? Like, are you going to change and scrap right. your game plan? Are you going to, like, ask them to keep doing it better? You know, and then also some coaches aren't great. Some guys might be great at adjustments and they might be great at game plan, but they can't talk to players and sure. players don't respect them. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so to be able to talk to players, to have a relationship with them, to have them trust you, to be able to go into a coach's meeting and be able to get a practice plan and understand what's going wrong with your team and be able to diagnose what's happening and be able to make adjustments and have a game plan that is sound, that players can buy into. And then when you get into the game, to be able to make adjustments, this is why Cheryl Reeve is so great, because she's great at all of that.
Yeah.
She's great at all of it. And so is Chris Finch. I really think Finchie's, you know, his time in Europe and all the time he spent in the G League too, coaching with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers and being an assistant coach with Houston, Denver, Toronto, New Orleans, kind of bouncing around, understanding all these different coaches' concepts has really prepared him to where he's at right now. And there's a reason why the Timberwolves have been to the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. Hmm. It's because Chris Finch has a perspective. He's got a really great understanding of what he thinks is most important about basketball. and he's able to impart that information to his players so that they can go out and execute on a nightly basis. So there's a lot of things that I really love and respect about both of these dynamics with the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Lynx organization.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's crazy to me to think that I think Coach Reeve won Coach of the Month one time this season, which was her third Coach of the Month. Yeah, she has 4 Coach of the Year awards, which is like a little bit astounding to me, where it's like, all right, you're the best coach of the year 4 times in a row, yet you're only the best coach for 3 months of years. It's a little bit, I would assume, voter fatigue, where it's like, well, she's always doing a great job, and so they get tired of voting her in every year. But I mean, shout out to the other coaches. I know Natalie Nicasse of Golden State Valkyries. I mean, they did a great job, you know, in their inaugural season this year. So that was pretty cool. Jim, I do want to ask you one more thing. I've heard about this before with the Lynx, but I would just love if you can share with us. There's this what we call the Prince story that you had with the Lynx. And please, you know, by your account, we would love to hear about what is the Prince story.
Well, so, you know, we won championships in 2011. We won in Atlanta. And then in 2013, we won in Atlanta again. And so we won 2 championships on the visitors' floor. So now in 2015, we beat the Indiana Fever. We had lost to them in 2012. We should have won that series. We lost in 2014 to the Phoenix Suns in the Western Conference, or Phoenix Mercury in the Western Conference Finals. And then, so then 2015, now we beat Indiana and we kind of, you know, it's a big deal. It's our third championship and we're winning this game at Target Center. And so Prince had been a big fan. He'd been a big Wolves fan. He'd come to a bunch of Wolves games back when I first started, back in the 90s and early 2000s. Prince was coming and it was a fixture with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. But he was there that night. In our game 5 against Indiana, and I'm on the court after the game and we're celebrating the championship. We're getting the trophy presentation. We're doing all this stuff. And as all this is going on, I'm talking to the president of our team, Roger Griffith. And Roger says, Jim Pete, he goes, we're going to Paisley Park tonight after we go to 7. So we were going to 7, the restaurant, the sushi restaurant on the corner over there on Hennepin Avenue. And so we went to 7 and we hung out, but then we had buses that were going to take us out to Paisley Park. And I was so excited because I've had so many friends go out to Paisley Park and have Prince experiences, but I'd never been there. Okay. I know where it was. I was going to buy a hobby farm next to Prince's house. I didn't pull the trigger on that. I should have. But I was so excited to go out to Paisley Park. So I didn't get on the bus that they had for our Lynx employees. I rode out to Paisley Park with some ESPN people and some people from the NBA. So I rode out in SUV and we get to Paisley Park and we start walking in and there's security there and they take our phones from us. They do not allow us to walk in there with our phones because they want to make sure that nobody is taking pictures and videoing prints and videoing these moments. So they had a metal detector and they had a desk that we walked up and they said, give us your phone. You're not getting in unless you give us your phone. So I gave my phone up. They put it in a little pouch and made sure it was secure. And I had a little cubby hole for my phone or whatever. And I walked in, and as I walk in into Paisley Park, it's like this huge auditorium, it's a big concert hall. Like Prince has his own concert hall, and there's a bandstand, and he's playing Delirious when we walk in. It's like this this crazy, like, surreal moment where Prince is on stage. And, you know, it's this big hall, and there's only about 30 people in there right now at the moment I got there. And when you think about the Timberwolves and Link staff that were there, and then some of the writers, the players, I mean, it only got about 1/16th full. And we were getting a private concert from Prince. And this dude went from instrument to instrument. He went from guitar to piano to drum to bass. It was unbelievable. He played. And so I think by the time I got there, it was probably midnight. By the time I got there, he played till like 4:35 in the morning.
That's crazy.
And so I left. I had to go. I could not. I mean, I had a long, think about that. Think about the day that we had from getting up in the morning to go to shoot around, to prepare for the game, to play the game, to go, you know, go to seven. I mean, and then to spend like at least three hours at Paisley Park. I was wasted by the time 3:30 came. So, but you want to know something though? I ended my evening with Prince by going to White Castle with our video coordinator, Wes Bond. Me and Wes Bond and my wife Tika, we left Paisley Park and we drove to the White Castle over in Northeast Minneapolis, over by the University of Minnesota campus, and we got White Castle hamburgers at 3:30 in the morning. So
that's so good.
It was one of the greatest nights of my life to stand like from, you know, like 10, I was 10 feet away from Prince.
That's crazy.
Playing all these different instruments. It was a great night.
Yeah. I wish Stud Buds was there to capture
that.
Oh
my God. They would have popped up on stage. How great are those two, by the way? How great
Seriously.
Are
those? Yeah. I cannot wait for this year. Say they win, you know, if everything goes according to plan, they win the finals, and you know, we get, I don't know, whatever hot artist now, you know, has a private concert for them. We got Sub Buzz live streaming it. It's been so much fun following the two of them, and they have such a great story. I just read Courtney Williams, that Player Tribune piece. It was so good just talking about her upbringing and kind of, you know, what she stands for, who she represents. And it's super cool. I love following the two of them this year for sure.
Love it.
Yeah, that's my favorite story, Jim. I think you told it on Zach Lowe's podcast many years ago. And
yeah,
just as a Minnesotan, that story hooked me immediately.
Oh, it was great. I'll never forget it. None of us will. We still talk about it. My wife and I were just talking about it the other day because we miss Prince, you know, because we still hear Prince songs on the radio. And I mean, I'll never forget when Prince passed away. I was talking to Glenn Taylor at the time. Glenn and I were talking about something unrelated to the Timberwolves. We were talking about Lynx basketball, I think. And I was asking him some questions about the Lynx and player personnel when he told me that Prince passed away. Glenn did. So he was really affected by it too, because Prince was a big fan of the Lynx, and Glenn was aware of that. And when Prince passed away, man, that was one of the worst days of my life, because I've been hearing about Prince since I was in high school, because when I was in high school, I used to go to North Minneapolis to play pickup games. My dad would bring me over north, and then when I was old enough to be able to drive myself, I would go to North Minneapolis. And the Dave Chappelle skit.
I was gonna ask.
That is real. Prince could hoop. The guys used to talk. There was a guy named Andre Griffin who used to play in those pickup games with us. He was a great player, played at University of Washington from Minneapolis. And we used to talk about Prince and what a great hooper he was. The Dave Chappelle story is 100% true, man. Prince used to be able to hoop it up.
That's dope. That's so cool, man. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us again. We always love. I've heard, you know, parts of the story. I feel like every time you tell it, I find out something new to the story. So it just kind of adds to that lore. That's great.
So I wanted to talk to you, Jim, about your playing career, because I don't feel like, at least I don't think I've heard you talk about it much, and specifically the 1986 playoff run you guys went on.
Because
so the Lakers make the finals 7 out of 8 years, and there's that. And the one year they don't is 1986 with a I believe, a second year, Hakeem Olajuwon just dominating. So I rewatched game three of that Lakers Rockets game, and Kareem just dominates. What, just tell, give me any, or excuse me, Hakeem dominates, not Kareem. Just give me any Hakeem story you got. Just what was playing with him like?
Well, I mean, the dream, like, we were drafted together, you know, mm-hmm. and I just was telling this story today when I was playing golf with some friends, because they were asking me about Hakeem Olajuwon. And so when I'm drafted by the Houston Rockets, Dream was drafted first. He was drafted number one. I was drafted 51st. And so I would have been a second round pick today, but I was a third round pick back then because there were only 23 teams. And so I went down to San Antonio. They didn't, there was no Vegas Summer League. They had divisional, like little, like, tournaments that they would play. So we had a Midwest rookie review where the people that were drafted and free agents would get together and they would play, and was Minnesota, it was Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, and Denver, and then the Utah Jazz. That was the old Midwest division back in the day. And so I ended up playing really well in that Midwest rookie review. And as we're driving back to Houston, Bill Fitch came back and sat with me where I was sitting on the bus, and he said, "We're going to give you a 1-year guaranteed contract. So you've made the team." So this was in July. So just imagine how I felt like in July, after the draft, where Bill Fitch is telling me, "We're going to give you a 1-year rookie contract." By the way, I made $85,000 my first year.
Hey, ballin'.
I mean, 85 grand. It was a little different back then, but I was so excited. So I went back home after that. And I was so excited to tell my parents that I was going to be on the team. At least I was going to get a guaranteed contract. So I went back to Houston to start training camp. And I was there, you know, a week before training camp started. And we were playing some pickup games. And Bill Fitch was there. And I remember playing a pickup game again. So I'm playing on the team against Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon. Ralph Sampson's 7'4". Hakeem Olajuwon is Hakeem Olajuwon. And, you know, I'm just this kid from Minnesota, right? So I'd never played against Hakeem Olajuwon. I'd only seen him on TV, and I was kind of like in awe of him a little bit. You know, think about the Vice Slamma Jamma and 1983, the game where they lost against North Carolina State, but Dream was still super dominant. Mm-hmm. And to see Ralph Sampson in person too, 7'4". So Wembanyama, he was Wembanyama's size, but he was more athletic than Wembanyama.
He's fast. I was watching the highlights.
Like Ralph was an incredible athlete. And Wembanyama is too, obviously, but I'm saying, like, people are thinking Wembanyama is like this anomaly. Ralph Sampson was the first freak of nature, like 7'4", you know, just a force on the court. And so, like, I'm playing against these two dudes, and I'm not intimidated, but I'm still a little bit in awe. And I don't know, I went up to, you know, get a layup, and Hakeem pins it against the glass, and I went up to dunk the ball, and Ralph snuffs it. And I wasn't able to do it. And then, I don't know, like, they were getting rebounds over me or whatever. And Bill Fitch, this is Peterson. He goes, "Peterson, come over here." He goes, "You might want to take it to another level."
Damn.
So anyway, so I was like, okay. And so, like, you know, my whole mindset coming into Houston was, I tell the story all the time, like, to people, because when I was a junior and senior at the University of Minnesota, my summer internships were to work for Pillsbury. And so I worked in grocery sales for Pillsbury. And so, I mean, you know, it was an honorable job. It's a great job. I met a lot of great people. Like, had I not made it to the NBA, I probably would have gone to work for Pillsbury. And so when I'm talking to my agent, as I'm going down to Houston for training camp, he tells me, he goes, "Jim, you got two choices here, basically." He goes, "You could either play with Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon with the Houston Rockets, or you can sell cake mix. Which one do you want to do?" And so I went down to Houston and I said, "One of you MFers is going to lose your job. Because I am not going to back to sell cake mix. I'm going to tell you that." So I went down there with a mission. I was going to be a Tasmanian devil. And so I ended up doing that. And that's really how I made the team, was by sheer didn't giving myself, there was no way out. The door was closed behind me, and it was like a cage match between me and the people that were in front of me. So that's really, really how I made it.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Yeah. So one comparison I thought, when the Wolves make the West Finals, apparently they lose in five is the recent trend. Well, when Jim Peterson goes to the West Finals, you guys win in five. And I did want to talk about that game five. So I'm watching it because I'm not bored by 1986. Hakeem gets ejected in game five. You guys are down four. And what do I see is here comes Jim Peterson to come close the game out. Right, so you guys are down four with what, like 5 minutes left, and you grab a rebound and Kareem ties you up with 2:17 left. You guys are down two. So you and Kareem jumping the ball. And this is a key moment in the game, I think, because you win the jump ball against Kareem. It goes to Samson. He gets fouled and hits two free throws to tie it up. And we can talk about the game winner too, that crazy game winner later. But what do you have any memories of that, specifically that jump ball in game five?
Ryan, this is why I love you, man. Like, you go to the next level. Like you don't know how proud I am of that moment when I tied Kareem up and won the jump ball, because that was a big play. It was a big play in the game. And I prided myself on my defense. And, you know, so we beat the Lakers and we played the finals against the Celtics. And one of the things I did in the Celtics series was defend Kevin McHale. And Jackie McMullen, who's the great writer for the Boston Globe, she told me years later, she goes, you know, I never saw anybody defend Kevin McHale as well as you did. And the same is true with Kareem in that series. Like, I did a great job on Kareem. And one of my techniques that I used was I didn't let him catch the ball. Like, I was like circling around him. I would front him, and then I'd get in front, and then I'd circle back around. And if they tried to lob it over the top, I'd steal it, or Dream would be there. It was one of the great things to be able to have Hakeem Olajuwon and Ralph Sampson behind me, that I could be aggressive like that. So I remember just being super aggressive in that game five. When Hakeem got ejected from the game for fighting with Mitch Kupchak, which that in and of itself, that fight in and of itself.
Crazy. Yeah.
And Dream also got tossed out earlier in the second round. We beat Sacramento in the first round. We beat Denver in the second round, but Dream got ejected from that game too for bumping Jack Madden, the referee. So we had Dream had been a volatile dude. Like, he was a really volatile kind of player, and we were used to playing without him. So in that game five against the Lakers, though, you know, that was one of my great moments. You know, and then Ralph Sampson hits this shot with 1 second.
People should go watch it. It's crazy. There's,
if you haven't seen the Ralph Sampson shot in the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers, you should go back and see it, because you're going to see a grown man in me when Ralph hits that shot. I've never given a person a hug harder than that hug, Ryan. You know what I mean? Like, you've seen it. You've seen the video of me hugging Ralph and the excitement, and then going into the tunnel, because, you know, back then the Lakers and the visitors would leave and walk down the tunnel, the same tunnel, which is kind of dangerous. You can think about how it is now. Mm-hmm. You don't do that anymore. Teams go to separate ends of the floor. And actually, you know, I've had people – talk to me about this too, because like, they've seen like that Lakers Celtics series that's been on ESPN, the 30 for 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a video of us winning that game that you're talking about, Ralph hitting the shot, us going into the tunnel together, and me shaking Kareem's hand, because Kareem was my hero, man. Like, we just got done beating him and I could not believe it. And Kareem shakes my hand, and I don't know. It's just one of those surreal moments, man. It's just, I kind of wished I would have played later to be able to make the big salary, but at the same time, I feel like I played in the golden age of the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to play against Julius Erving. I got to play against Dr. J and Kareem and Magic and Larry and those great Celtic and Laker teams. So, I didn't make the money that I wish I could have made, but I have a lot of great memories. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, they talk about, is it the 83 or 84 draft that you get?
84 draft.
Yeah. I mean, yep. They talk about that as like one of the best draft class ever. And it's, of course, it's Hakeem, it's Michael Jordan, and it's Jim Pete, right?
That's right. That redraft. Yeah.
Yes.
But I did want to quick touch on maybe less fun, the finals against the Celtics, maybe less fun for you. Cool note I found is, so you got two Gophers in the finals. That's fun. The two other times I could kind of find where there's multiple Golden Gophers in the finals is a couple years later with Michael Thompson and McHale. You guys in this 86 final.
Yeah.
And then this one's out there. The Minneapolis Lakers in the 50s had multiple Gophers on it. And one of them was legendary Vikings coach Bud Grant is one of those Gophers.
Man.
So that's
a deep pull.
Hey Leo, you can always count on Ryan for doing the deep dive.
Dude, I know. I love it.
But that 86 Celtics team is crazy good. The Bird in that game six is great. But another note, they are 40-1 at home the entire regular season, and they go 8-0 at home in the playoffs, and it's kind of, I think you guys have a much better shot of winning a title if it comes like a year earlier or a year later, and you guys ran into a buzzsaw. Fair assessment? No, how many years later?
No, my first year in the league, the three point guards we had on our team were Phil Ford, who was a North Carolina superstar, great player, John Lucas, who was number one pick in 77. We all know who John Lucas is, so you guys can remember. He was a great player and a great coach. And then the third one was Lionel Hollins, who played for the Portland Trail Blazers, won a championship with Bill Walton, but played with Dr. J as well. So we had three veteran point guards. And so in the second year, so John Lucas was my first 84. John Lucas was kicked off the team for using cocaine. Cocaine was a big problem in the late 70s, early 80s with the NBA, and they were trying to eradicate it. And anybody that tested positive was kicked off the team. So we lost John Lucas my first year. Bill Fitch loved him and wanted to give him a second chance. We brought him back in year two. So the year that we went to the finals against the Celtics, John Lucas was our point guard, and we started out, we had a great season. John was super important to what we were doing. He was clean. He was playing great, and he was the catalyst of our team. And as we progressed through the season, we had all the success. And so I'll never forget the day that his wife told me we're playing the Boston Celtics at our place. We beat Boston at the Summit in Houston. And his wife, after the game, came to me and she said, "Jim, I'm worried about John. You need to talk to him. He's got friends in town who I'm not a big fan of right now, and he doesn't need to do this." And so John ended up going out, and he didn't listen to anybody, and he ended up going out with his friends, and he ended up using, and he ended up being kicked off our team again. And it was towards the end of the season when this happened. And so we lost our point guard. We lost the guy that was the catalyst for our team. And I got to tell you, had John Lucas not been kicked off our team, I think we would have beat the Celtics. One of the greatest teams, if not the greatest team in NBA history. But I think losing John Lucas that year was the big reason why we didn't beat them. Because we didn't have anybody to be able to counter Danny Ainge and Dennis Johnson. We had Robert Reed, who really was a small forward, playing point. And you guys know how important a point guard is. I mean, think about if Timberwolves lost Mike Conley or whatever. But anyway, so yeah, it was, you know, I'm really lucky. I just feel so blessed to have been able to be a part of history, you know, like a small part. You know what I mean? Like I'm a footnote in NBA history. But I've been able to bring my experience as a player to Timberwolves fans in the form of my analysis as a basketball player, and for whatever that's worth.
Well, Jim, you say that you're a footnote, but I play this thing that it's called Immaculate Grid, where it's like, you know, you have the nine players and you guess them. Anytime it's the Rockets, Kings, or Warriors, I put your name down, and you'd be surprised. It's like 1%. It's not as small as you might think. It's 0.0. No, it's like a 1 or 2%. I'm like, people know you, so I'm just saying, you know, it's not just a footnote.
Thank you, Leo.
All right. Well, I appreciate you going down memory lane with me, and I think Leo's got some memory lane stuff
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, a couple quick things, Jim. Again, so when we first kind of were able to meet, we talked about at the start of the episode. It was about, you know, it was through Candace Hoopus, and we talked about, you know, one of my good friends, Mike, aka Boston. Can you tell us a little bit about Candace Hoopus? I know that when you were on a live recording pod episode with Kyle Tighe and Dave Moore, you talked about Candace Hoopus is kind of like all in the family, right? It's like this coaching tree that you have all these spinoffs, right? You know, you Dane's doing his thing, Kyle's doing his thing, and you know, we have all these great people now. You know, Ryan and I, we're doing our thing. But tell us a little bit, like, how did you find out about Candace Hoopus, and how did it fall on your radar? Like, you know, how did that come about? When's the first time you learned about that?
You know, it's kind of funny. I got to tell you the story. So,
yeah.
In 2006, I start building a house, right, in Wayzata. And my wife is really great friends with one of the Wolves players, and one of Wolves players' wives. I'm not going to name the name.
Sure.
And so she was talking to my wife, and she was saying, I'm on this KFAN website on what was the KFAN chat board? Whatever it was, Rube Chats or whatever.
Rube Chats. Yeah.
And so she's like, she would look up what they were saying about her husband on Roop Chat. She would,
wow,
as like in real
game.
Time, yeah. As in real time, yeah. Like in the games, because like the fans would talk about the players on these chat boards. I really didn't know that anything about it at the time, but so she was talking to my wife, and she's like, they were talking about Trenton, but they also started talking about Jim on Roop Chat. They were really angry with something he said about Wally Szczerbiak. And so one of the people were like, yeah, I know where he lives. I know where he's building his house. I'm going to go over and egg his house for saying that about Wally. And so I was like, so Tika's talking to this player's wife, and she's telling her all this stuff. And then you know what? 2 days later, somebody did egg our house. As it was under construction. And so I was like, I got to pay more attention to this, like this whole medium. You know what I mean? I need to pay more attention to what's going on here. So this happened on Roop Chat. And so I started looking at it, but I don't know. It was Roop Chat was, I didn't respect the mindset of the people that were there.
Sure.
And then, when, you know, I'm always doing my research, right? I'm always trying to get the latest and greatest information for the games to be able to prep. And so when Candace Hoopus became live, I saw a community of people that were really smart and real. I mean, the writers. And so, you know, getting to know Tim Allen and Nate Arch at the beginning, Stop and Pop, Nate Arch, fantastic. Tim Allen, just a huge heart, and getting to know those two guys and what they started and reading the articles that they wrote. They were big time fans. And, you know, at the time, Mike Rinaldi, who was the PR director for the Timberwolves, he really didn't think they needed to be credentialed. And so I said, Mike, I said, you know what? These guys are writing as poignant of articles and like so smart, like they should be credentialed. These guys are real writers, every bit as much as Steve Ashburner, you know, whoever's writing for this, for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Like, these two dudes are for real. I mean, like, and so it wasn't as evident back then, but it became evident, you know what I mean, Leo?
Yeah.
And so Tim and Nate, for me, were my first contact with Canis, but then it became the community, like just going into the comments section, because no one wants to go to the comments section of the Star Tribune. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it might get you a house egg, do you like, know? Yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you know, like the comments section of the Star Tribune, it's just all people that just are haters, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And when you go to Canis Hoopus and you read the articles and you go into the comments section of the articles, you got real basketball fans there, and you got real people that understand the game, and it's a community. This is why I say between Dane and Britt and John and Jace and, you know, and all the people, Kyle Tighe, like just everybody in this, and then Canis Hoopus is a big part of that, and you're part of that, Leo, and so are you, Ryan. Like, we're all in this together, right? Like, we have this love affair with this team, and it's just a great community. And so my thing with Canis Hoopus is that I just hope it doesn't go away, because I know the SB Nation, I know the other teams, SB Nation's accounts have kind of fallen by the wayside. Right. And Canis Hoopus hasn't. And Leo, you're to be commended. Ryan, you're to be commended for keeping this content going. And so I just have a tremendous amount of love and respect for both of you for being a part of the solution of keeping the Timberwolves content alive, because at this point for me, it's like we're a family. And yeah. I hope you feel that when I'm broadcasting games and I'm shouting out Canis Hoopus. I hope you guys feel that.
Yeah.
That I really respect what you guys do.
Yeah, it's such a full, like, I feel like you've come so far, right? From Rube Chat getting threatened about your home to now, like, you're like a folk hero, you know, to us, right? I mean, you're literally one of us, like, when we see you. And we know that, look, Jim's lurking in the comments maybe somewhere. You know, he's looking through every now and then. And, like, you know, we still play that guessing game. Like, I have
not to, all the time. Not, I'm not doing it all the time. Sure, I do it periodically.
Well, I mean, I have to ask you on record, like, you don't have to answer, but what's your burner account? You must have a burner account.
I do not have a burner account. I don't do that.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Don't do it.
No, but the last thing I want to ask you about Canis, again, thank you so much, Jim, by the way. I mean, look, we love you over there in Canis. And not even just Canis. I mean, it really is. Like you said, it's a community. And that's why we keep it together. I mean, we went through, you said at the beginning, the dark times. And now we're going through some great times together. And people come and go. And it's awesome. But there's one tweet I want to ask you about. And I have this screenshot from March 12, 2012. So looking at 13 years ago, you say on Twitter, BTW, by the way, at Main Hole Up might be the trillest and most original blog contributor on the internet, Main. Tell me a little bit, for those that are unaware, tell me a little bit about what that means.
What was that dude? Like, who was? What? I mean, I don't even know if I even said his name right, man. It's like, Main Hole Up.
He
used to like talk like he was Jamaican or something.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like,
I was there. Yeah.
He was one of the funniest contributors. I always wanted to meet that dude. Like, who is that dude? Did you ever meet him?
No, I never got to meet him. And those of you who were not in Canis Hoopus at the time or in the comment section, he was a guy that he would type in all caps and he would just like talk about the game. But, like,
he was wild.
Yeah,
he
it was crazy.
Wild.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
one of the most memorable contributors in Canis Hoopus history. And I always wanted to meet that dude. And if you're able to hear this, please come up to me and tell me that you're that guy. Because I want to meet you. I want to shake your hand because you entertained me for years.
Man. Dude, it was hilarious. It was hilarious. We have, you know, personalities on there that I was hoping, honestly, Jim, I was hoping that you'd announce, say that you were Main Hole Up. But I'm sad to hear it was not you. But yes, if you were out there and you're listening, please. Yeah. No. You're a hero amongst us all. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Great memory.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we did want to talk a little bit about the Wolves upcoming season. We got Media Day in just a week. So the preseason's right upon us. Is there something specifically you're looking forward to this season with the team, or just more Wolves basketball?
I can't wait to see how Finchie uses Rob.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just think that the rotations are going to be very interesting. Is Finchie going to start Mike, or is he going to start Dante? You know, the fact that the Wolves were able to extend Rudy last year during the season and then get Nas and Julius signed was a big deal. So those three should feel very comfortable in their situation. And I'm telling you, Grady and I went to a game or to a practice the other day, a workout earlier in the week, and we got to see Johan Berenguer. And this dude is ready. I think he's ready to play. I don't think he's going to be a project. I think he's ready to play. You saw what he did in summer league, and the practice I was watching. Rudy wasn't there, and Jaden wasn't there, but this dude caught everything and finished everything. Strong finishes, cleared his body, got great balance. His switchability defensively. His ability to be able to switch and defend on the perimeter is just so tremendous. His instincts defensively, I think he's going to be able to defend without fouling, which is such a key thing for young players. But I think he really understands his role and what he can do. And, you know, I was talking to Del Demps about this. I think it's really a great point, is that, like, Johan hasn't been tainted by playing AU basketball as a young player. Like, because he's picked up basketball so late, the basketball that he's played and who he's played with and where he's played, the coaching that he's got high level coaching since he's been playing. So he's not thought he was something that he wasn't, or, you know, got a lot of bad habits because he was playing all these AU games and wasn't competing, or, you know, it's like, no, he's been taught the right way to play. So I'm just super excited about Johan. And I can't wait to see, like, Terrence unleashed and to be in a rotational player situation. Like, to see TJ in that role, I think a lot of teams are – I bet a lot of teams are asking. I don't know. I haven't asked him about this, but I bet a lot of teams are asking about TJ, wanting to get to buy stock in him. And I would not move that dude. I would never move that dude until I see him play on an everyday basis. I think he's going to be a force of nature, and he's going to be a great compliment to Ant. So between Rob and Jalen Clark, like, how you can integrate those guys? What's the rotation going to look like? Is Johan going to play? Is he going to get meaningful minutes? How's that going to work? Super excited about Nas and Julius and what they're going to be able to do. Julius is going to be so much better, you know, not being traded the day before camp starts. So, no, it's going to be great. I'm super excited to get started. And by the way, too, I feel so lucky because so many great things are happening. Just like, Grady's going to be back for, you know, 20 some games. We don't know how many yet. We're going to see who is going to join me on the broadcast, but I think it's going to be great. But I'm just happy Michael Grady's coming back for the games he's coming back with, because he's just a phenomenal person and someone I really enjoy working with.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember which game it was, but I turned into the Lynx game and he was calling it on the national broadcast. And I was just like, yes, Grady calling the Lynx. This makes the game so much better. And especially last finals, if you remember, they had Ryan Rucco on the game, a great announcer, but he's kind of with the Liberty games. It was a little bit, it felt like he was cheering for the Liberty. So to have a Lynx person on the broadcast was fun too. But yeah, you mentioned the broadcast. It sounds like you don't really know who will be kind of filling in for the other X number of games that Grady won't be doing.
Well, I do know, but I'm sworn to secrecy.
Fair enough. Yeah. I won't push you on that, but a couple of quick questions we had listed. Do you have a favorite NBA arena? At least maybe for like a fan perspective or from like a broadcast perspective, do you have a favorite one?
I mean, I feel like Madison Square Garden is, it's just like, it still gives me goosebumps being in there as a player, as a broadcaster. When I coached with the Minnesota Lynx, going into Madison Square Garden to play the Liberty, it was a pretty cool spot. I think that some of it has to do with where we're seated now too. so many arenas have moved us up. It's just not what it used to be when we were down courtside, because when you're part of the game. So I would say, like, some of the arenas where we're still courtside, like Brooklyn, Denver, you know, we're courtside as well. Like, we get to sit courtside in games. And so in Denver, it's really special because we're our table's right by the bench, and like literally the coaching staff are right by us. So I would say though, the places that we get to sit courtside are my favorite places.
Yeah. And Jim, you know, we're so thankful for your time. We want to wrap things up with a lightning round of just this or that type questions. All right. And so you don't have to explain all of them. We'll do a quick one. All right. So I'll start right here. First one, Mike Breen's bang or Mike Grady's cash?
Cash, baby. Cash. Hey, we have fans coming up to us all the time. Some guy sent us a video quickly about his son. He showed his son in the back seat, and he was saying he was doing the Michael Grady call, the Ant Dunk in Utah. Edwards gets it back and throws it down like from the rafters, and it's this little kid doing the exact Grady call.
That's awesome.
Man, it's Grady has changed the landscape of the team.
Okay,
that's for sure.
Okay, love it. Next one, we'll do a quick start bench cut. All right, playing in the NBA, working TV, or coaching WNBA? Start, bench, cut.
That's crazy. Just like play in the NBA, broadcasting in the NBA, and coaching in the WNBA?
Yeah.
Remember, you won a jump ball in the West Finals.
I know. That is really hard. This is going to trip people out, but I'm going to say broadcasting games has been the greatest thing that I've been able to do, to be able to connect with this team and this is going to be my 28th year coming up. It's been the greatest job that anybody could ever have. And I love it so much. And I would start with that. I would bench coaching. I would cut playing. Because coaching in the WNBA, understanding how great these women are, and then going to the White House 3 times.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's that
hard to beat that.
That's a hard one, Leo. That's not fair, man.
Could have played the fifth, right? No. We'll move on with just a couple quick ones left. Best Timberwolves jersey.
Trees, man. The trees.
The black trees.
The black jersey with the trees.
Allegedly coming back.
They're gonna run it back this year. That's the jersey that Derrick Rose had his 50-point game in. When I see KG's 21, when I see KG,
yeah,
man, I could go back to those days. KG was so great. Hope he gets his jersey retired here.
Okay.
That'll be a great night for Timberwolves fans when that happens.
Yeah.
But like to see Ticket in that black trees jersey was the best.
Yeah. It fires me up. Okay. I'll do, two more here. Most memorable Ant fact.
Oh man, Ben and I used to go round and round about that, because I'd be like, Ben, you can't use an ant fact every time Ant dunks, man. You're gonna ruin every ant dunk. You can't do that. I don't know, what is it? Ants. I don't know. Ants kill their own or whatever. What? I got nothing right now. I'd have to go back and review. Like, I got nothing. I can't remember all Ben's ant facts, but. What I do know though is Ant did like the Ant facts though.
Oh,
because we talked to Ant. We saw him at the hotel across from the Target Center in the lobby one season. I think it was after his rookie year, and his family was there, and Ben's and I were in there with a bunch of Timberwolves people, and Ant, he went over and talked to Ant, and this was during the empty arena season, so we didn't 21. Get a chance to see them, right? Ant was aware of it, first of all, and he said he liked it. So,
oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe Jim said bring him back. We'll see.
All I know is Grady's not saying any Ant facts. That's for sure.
He's got cash. All right, last one, Jim. Your prediction for the Lynx and also for the Wolves at the end of this
Lynx
season for the
are going to be champions once
Let's
again.
Go.
They are going to win the championship, And I think the Wolves are getting back to the Western Conference Finals again. I think they're going to have, hopefully have more success. But I'm going to predict, for sure a first round win. I think the second round is going to be very interesting. But I think this team is trial tested. They're a really close group. This is a close coaching staff. I think our organization is as united as it's ever been, even though we've gone through all these coaching, all these ownership changes and all of that. I think that this team is really special. So I'm going to hopefully we get a deep playoff run. So I'm pretty confident of that.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jim, for being on. Anything else you want to add before we close out?
No, man, just grateful for you guys, man. Just grateful to be a part of this community. It's a great community, and we'll see you guys down the line.
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
Thank you, Jim.
Really appreciate your time. It's been great talking to you. But yeah, for Leo and Jim, I'm Ryan. Thank you.
Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!